Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, my name's Nigel Jones, and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan. And welcome to today's edition of Bodcast, where I'm joined by Sarah Buxton, and we're going to be exploring the topic of employment tribunals, tribunal claims, and the law overall. Sarah, would you mind just introducing yourself?
Yeah, hi Nigel, I'm Sarah Buxton and I'm a director and HR and employment solicitor at FTA Law. We're based in Leeds, but we act for dental practice owners, practice managers and dentists in all aspects of buying, selling and running a dental practice.
Okay, well, thank you. So running a dental practice, obviously there's HR matters, employment law considerations. And I know that it's changing all the time. And one of the changes that's happened is that fees to make a claim to an employment tribunal have been abolished. And I just wonder what your take on the implications of that was.
Yeah, that's correct. I've been working in the dental industry for about 9 years now. And during that time, there was a period where there was no tribunal fees to make a claim to the employment tribunal. Then they brought them in, and it cost about £280 for an employee to make a claim, and they've recently just abolished them. So what that means, and what I've seen over the last 9 years, is that when there was no fees, employers were at risk of getting more claims because it didn't cost the employee to make a claim. And then, of course, when they brought in the fees, the employee had to be pretty certain that they had a good case. Because obviously it was going to cost them. So there was actually a drop in the amount of employment tribunal disputes that I was dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And they've only abolished it maybe 6 weeks ago, and already I've seen an increase in the amount of claims coming through. So it is really going to have an effect on practice owners.
Do you know what the logic was between dropping the fees again?
My understanding is that the trade unions were not very happy because they thought that it was unjust for people to have to pay to achieve justice, basically. So they made a case, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, so the highest court, and it was ruled that it was unfair. Basically they abolished them there and then.
So it sounds unlikely that it's going to change again in the foreseeable future.
I wouldn't have thought so. It does depend who's in power at the time. When there was the last election, Labour said that they would have abolished them in any event. So it could all change again, but it has been a big administrative headache for our legal system. They have been running around like headless chickens trying to sort out who should pay for claims and who shouldn't. So I can't imagine that anybody will be in a rush to try and change the system again.
Okay, so that looks like then we're facing that increase in claims carrying on for a while. And what sort of claims are you tending to see?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of them are spurious claims where they're just trying it on, basically, to try and get a compensation payment. The employment tribunals were set up originally so that neither party had to use a solicitor, but obviously we got involved. And people like to be represented in the court system. So what that means is that neither party has to pay the other party's costs if they win or lose. So each party bears their own legal fees. So from a practice owner's point of view, if they're having to pay legal fees, and you're looking at from the date of receiving a claim all the way to final hearing, maybe being in the region of £20,000, then quite often they will make a commercial decision to try and pay the employee right at the outset, because if the employee will go away for £1,000, then actually they've saved themselves £19,000. And so a lot of the time people make claims to try and get this commercial settlement. So often the claims are nonsense claims, where people are just trying it on. There are always genuine claims where people go wrong, and often without any malice. They just haven't kept up to date with the recent legislation and haven't been aware that it's changed. But unfortunately, we do live in a society where there's lots of claims made where they're just trying to get a commercial settlement out of the employer.
And I guess that must be quite tricky for the employer at times, because although you can see the financial argument for settling for £1,000 as opposed to paying out £20,000, there'd be a principle that they're worried about.
Absolutely. And some principals will still want to go all the way to final hearing, because they don't want to set an example that if an employee leaves, that they'll just make a claim, that they'll just pay them off. They don't want to open up that situation to their other staff. And there are employers who do believe that actually, even though commercially it is worth settling, if they've got a good case, they want to prove that in open court, and they'll go all the way to final hearing. So it really is a decision for the individual. It's quite hard, because an employment tribunal proceedings are emotionally draining, and it can take up to 52 weeks before you get to final hearing, and it can involve a lot of the team. If you have to get witnesses on board, and we all know that dental teams are close-knit, so if one person is making a claim, it does really affect the morale of the practice.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, they're very small teams, aren't they? So that's a big proportion that you're in dispute with if they do take it that far. So and there's the spurious claims, and then there's the legitimate claims, which my guess is a lot of the time could have been avoided with the appropriate policies, procedures, approach in place. So what sort of things are you seeing where you think actually that could have been nipped in the bud?
Absolutely. A lot of employers don't realise that people can make a claim before you've actually employed them. So during the recruitment process, and often people make judgments during the recruitment process and don't often realise that the individual is protected. So for example, if you receive a CV and it's got spelling mistakes in that CV, and you put that to one side and say, I'm not going to interview them, if that person is dyslexic, they're actually protected under the legislation, and actually the employer should have made a reasonable adjustment and interviewed that individual. And lots of employers don't know that, and they're just thinking, well, why would you send me a CV that's full of spelling mistakes? I don't want to employ that individual. And then a claim would be made in those circumstances, because the person who had the disability hasn't been given a fair chance of interview. So I can see in that circumstance the employer's point of view as to why they may not want somebody who in their mind has poor spelling, and I can also see why we need to protect the employee who, by no fault of their own, suffers from a disability. So that's often the case, that during the recruitment process, I find that I deal with a lot of claims. And often claims are made because, not because the reason that the employer has acted is wrong, it's purely because they've failed to follow a correct procedure. So I always say, with anything you do with HR and employment, there's probably a procedure there. So for example, if you have a flexible working request where somebody wants to work part-time, your reason for rejecting that request usually is a good solid reason where a business can't take on somebody on a part-time basis. But there's a procedure to go through to reject that request, and often practice owners will miss out the procedure, and just by virtue of the fact that they've missed out a procedure means that that employee has a really good claim.
So they wouldn't have arrived at a different conclusion, but the technicality of not having followed the process has left them exposed.
Absolutely. So as you said, having the correct policies in place is really important, and keeping them up to date.
Yeah. And does this apply to all staff? Where do self-employed staff fit within this picture?
Yeah, with the employment legislation, employees are heavily protected, and employees have the right to bring unfair dismissal claims. So if they've been employed for more than 2 years and their employment is terminated, and again, often the reason is correct for the termination, it's just that the employer has failed to follow the correct procedure to achieve that termination. In those circumstances, if the procedure isn't followed, an employee can bring unfair dismissal. As a self-employed person, they don't have the right to bring an unfair dismissal claim. You can serve notice on a self-employed person, and they wouldn't be able to bring that claim. But they are protected by the discrimination legislation. So for example, if you serve notice on a self-employed person because they were on maternity, then they would still have a right to bring a claim in the employment tribunal.
Right, okay. I hadn't realised that. That's, okay, very interesting, very useful. If we get to that stage, if it does get to a tribunal, what's involved in the proceedings?
As I said, the tribunal proceedings can last for quite a long time, and the first indication that a claim is going to be raised will be that the practice owner will receive a call through ACAS, which is a conciliatory body, and they try and prevent the matter from going to tribunal, because our courts are very busy, and if we can settle early on, they do their best to try and settle the claim at that stage.
And what does that look like, Sarah? Is that, would they be putting forward the suggestion of settle for £1,000 instead of £20,000?
They don't provide advice, but what they would do is, it's usually via a telephone call, and they usually say, the employee has said they've got a claim against you for these reasons. Would you like to make an offer to settle? But they wouldn't advise as to what that amount should be. Often at that stage, practice owners will say, no, I'm not going to settle. And then we see if the employee goes on to make a claim. Because you can settle a claim at any point during employment tribunal proceedings. So sometimes it's worth waiting to see if they actually go ahead and make the claim. If they go ahead and make the claim, you receive a claim form which sets out the employee's particulars. And that will state why they think they have a claim against the employer. And then you have to respond within 28 days. At that point, the court usually sets out directions, so a set of instructions for how the case should unfold. And at this point, it actually starts getting quite emotive for people, because if you have to do witness statements, it's quite difficult for people to try and put their case across, so you may have to ask other members of the team to provide witness statements, and they can't always remember, and also looking for evidence. Sometimes practice owners tend to destroy evidence quite quickly because they feel as though they don't need those documents anymore. And that can have an impact on tribunal proceedings. So my advice is always keep everything for at least 6 months after somebody's employment has come to an end, in case a claim is raised.
Okay, so I mean, it sounds as if, just listening to you there, that if you're going to involve other members of the team, that point that you made earlier about it being pretty disruptive for a very small practice team, it's not just the individual, it's not just the atmosphere, actually.
No.
Other people could be called into the proceedings.
It is incredibly stressful, and it is an emotional roller coaster for everybody involved. And that's why sometimes, even though there's principles at stake, a commercial settlement may be worthwhile, because at the end of the day, it's more important that the practice owner gets on with their day job and treats their patients and does the dentistry and looks after the staff that's left, than maybe trying to fight a principle Unfortunately, that's how our court system is at the moment, and it's not looking as though it's going to change anytime soon.
That it makes sense, because I mean, although there's the cost of legal fees of £20,000 that we were talking about before, actually there's an additional cost in morale, in motivation,
absolutely,
business
yes.
performance, all of that
absolutely.
You need to factor in.
Yeah.
So I mean, we spoke before about the fact that with the correct policies and procedures being adhered to, then that's one way of protecting yourself. Keeping records for
yes.
an appropriate period of time is another way of protecting yourself. Are there any other things that people should be thinking about?
Yeah, I would just always say take advice. It's much cheaper and much easier to take advice before you act, rather than trying to deal with a dispute because you've done something wrong, where if you'd have taken advice in the first place, you may not have got to that point. So it's really important that you take advice to make sure that your actions are correct, and if you do, you'll be put in the best position possible if a claim does arise, so that you can defend that claim.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Sarah. That's been really interesting, and I think everyone will appreciate the advice you've given there. So many thanks indeed.
Thank you.